Wednesday. I'm in a bad mood. Wednesday is an orange day, like a clementine. Since this morning, I've been taunted by several objects with an orange hue. My mandarin-scented daytime lotion, my watch band, the grated carrots for tonight's dinner in the fridge. I spent the night ruminating on all the fruits I could think of. I arrived at the following conclusion. I would have liked to be a peach, a blackberry, or a cherry. I hate being a clementine, but I also wouldn't have appreciated being a pear, a banana, or a grape. You forgot your ring last night when we came home. It was downstairs next to the keys. My husband crows, handing me my solitaire diamond ring. A fitting name. I have never felt so alone as I have since I've married him. His naivete is unbearable. My husband is so certain of my love that even my ring placed on the entryway table does not come across as a threat to him. What world is he living in? Even if the clementine incident hadn't happened, we should never have accepted Nicolas and Louise's invitation. What a pointless dinner. When I'm with my husband, I don't need to see our friends. I also don't have any desire to visit my parents. And I don't miss my children. My husband is enough for me. He, on the other hand, likes to be surrounded by people. He comes alive when he's among groups. He likes going out and meeting new people. But his sociability is painful for me. Each new person who enters into our life is an additional dilution of his attention, a dilution of him, and I'm horrified by this. The energy he expends toward others hurts me. It tells me that I am not enough for him. If I close my eyes and imagine it, my greatest joy would be a life restricted to the space of our home. My ideal situation would be endless one-on-one time with my husband, the two of us in our living room, drinking strong coffee, talking for hours on end. Sometimes I picture myself alone on the earth with him. I invent a fatal epidemic, a nuclear war that leaves us the only survivors, or a desert island where we wash up after a plane crash. When I think of my greatest happiness, it's always just the two of us. We are alone, and we are together. I can't help it. My paradise is being in a couple, a duo, a pair. I think back to the way we were at the beginning, before the children, the house, the commute, the daily routine. It was a time when my husband was sweeter, more tender, more affectionate. His hands would be clammy when he came to meet me, and he would do everything in his power to make me happy. Our love lived at a different rhythm. It was nourished each day, always expanding. He would come to the tiny room I was renting at 11 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon, whenever I wasn't teaching, to make love to me. He was finishing his studies, and I had just started work. When you're 25, you can have sex on a weekday, devote your morning or afternoon to it. I had a twin bed, so I bought a second mattress that I kept under mine. When he came over, we would put the two mattresses on the floor, covering the entire surface area of my top-story, 160-square-foot studio. Those two mattresses pushed together formed our raft. We were alone in the world, in the middle of an imaginary ocean. When we made love, we'd end up with our heads where our feet should be, the duvet balled up in a corner. I remember that he wouldn't undress me. He would touch me through my clothes until I gave in and removed them myself, one by one. He would touch me over my jeans, then over my underwear. He'd descend gently between my legs to delicately kiss the fabric, a restraint that drove me wild, a modesty that made me delirious. When I close my eyes, I can still feel his breath as he planted a kiss between my thighs on the thin strip of cotton. He would spend long minutes circumventing my want, dancing around my desire. I would be champing at the bit, raring for something tangible, a finger, a tongue, an ass cheek. He would do everything except what I was dying for him to do. He already understood that desire was born out of frustration, that it is often more effective to suggest than to do. He would keep me unsatisfied, awaiting my liberation. I had never so badly wanted to be penetrated. so I would drown in happiness when he finally thrust into me, and by the time he turned me over on the mattress and lifted my legs, I was already dreaming of my wedding dress. I'd moan to encourage him and think to myself, I'm sure this will be the man to put a ring on my finger. I'm sure he sees me as his wife and the future mother of his children. The proof? He doesn't pull my hair and doesn't ask me to go down on him. I'm about to leave for school when my husband calls for me. He can't find his wallet and he's going to be late to drop off the kids at school. He doesn't understand why it's not on the entryway table. He was sure he put it there, as he was the one who paid Zoe last night. You looked in the pockets of the pants you were wearing yesterday? I feel like I've lived out this scene 1,000 times. My husband asks me why his wallet or his keys aren't where he thinks he left them. Sometimes it's his cell phone. For years, I've been telling him to put his things in the same place, but it's no use. I hear my husband rushing around the bedroom, then silence. I was right. His wallet was, in fact, in his pants pocket. His forgetfulness began seemingly overnight a few months after the birth of our daughter. My husband wound up going to see a doctor, unnerved by his suddenly faulty memory. Sometimes he feels like he's going crazy. No problems for weeks, and then a watch disappears from the bathroom, only to show up later in a drawer. Since the scans and the neurological tests revealed nothing, no brain damage, no degenerative illness, we both chose to laugh about it. Ever since, we've been joking about his absent-mindedness. My husband has his head in the clouds. He's so scatterbrained. He forgets everything. His keys, his computer, his cell phone, his charger, the grocery list. Fortunately, he's never left the kids in a supermarket cart or in the car during a heat wave. Both my hands are on the wheel, but I can't bring myself to start the engine. The unbearable floral odor of my perfume permeates the entire car. I lower the windows, but outside it's the same thing. It smells like a bourgeois garden. It's always a losing battle against jasmine and rose. I glance in the rearview mirror and notice that I put on the wrong scarf. When I reached into the drawer earlier, I grabbed the one with the orange pattern. Ever since my husband turned me into a clementine, I've solemnly sworn never to wear clothing of this color again, when I thought I'd grab the green one. I didn't realize my mistake because I was getting dressed in the dark. During the drive, I am hounded by a long procession of orange objects, an advertisement for Sicily orange juice at a red light, and then an orange car stops next to me. I laugh nervously. I hate Wednesdays, and not only because the children don't go to school on Wednesday afternoons and we have to take care of them. Don't get me started with football, dance, and music classes we have to take them to. Wednesday is also the day of Mercury. That little chaotic, harried planet governs my sign, Virgo, and I am often at the mercy of its trajectory through the solar system. As soon as it goes into retrograde, as it is now, everything gets complicated. I struggle to communicate. I start questioning everything. I'm highly emotional. I hate Wednesdays, and I hate Mercury. My orange scarf is becoming more and more unbearable. At first, it was a slight inconvenience. Then I started having trouble breathing as I crossed the school courtyard. Now, inside the classroom, I'm suffocating. I take it off and throw it out the window. Some students trample on it down below. I can no longer stand having the evidence of my husband's transgression, that of keeping me from opening the shutters, knotted around my neck. It's because of him that I have to get dressed in the dark, and it's because of him that I put on the wrong scarf this morning. To calm myself down, I repeat what my mother always used to say. Marriage is all about compromise. Sleeping with the shutters closed, it's no big deal. What's more, many couples sleep that way. After all, it's just a question of habit. And scientists agree that sleep is more restorative in complete darkness. So, it's no big deal. But after 15 years, can we still say it's no big deal? 5,478 nights, is that really so negligible? 5,478 mornings of sleeping slightly worse. Doesn't that add up? 5,478 nights of not being woken up by natural light, isn't that a sacrifice that merits my outrage? Because of those closed shutters, I sleep poorly, and the lack of sleep chips away at my health and increases my risk of cancer. I'm not as efficient as I could be at work, and I drive more dangerously on the road. 15 years of being more irritable, of having less patience with my children and students, of having a harder time memorizing new information. 15 years of bad sleep, a vague fatigue that slows my reaction time. If I were to witness an accident, or if the house were to catch fire, the consequences could be disastrous. On top of it, sleeping poorly makes you gain weight, and my husband is the first to compliment me on my slenderness. Those 40,000 hours of destructive sleep in the dark, who will give them back to me? What will compensate for them? Marriage is all about compromise. But why did I have to be the one to adapt? There was no more reason for it to have been me to give in rather than him. And yet the closed shutters became a foregone conclusion between us. It was hardly a question. My husband could always cover his eyes with a sleep mask, but I can't artificially replicate natural light in our bedroom. Plus, yesterday, when I opened the shutters, the sunlight didn't even wake him up. Is his sleep really as light as he claims? One day he declared that he could sleep only in complete darkness, and that was that. Maybe he wouldn't even notice the difference. The injustice is so flagrant to me now, and so is, I hardly dare say it, the lie. Has my husband tricked me into believing that he can't sleep with the shutters closed, when in reality he has no idea if it's true, or worse, he knows it's not? Is it a power play? A way for him to assert dominance over me? Later in the morning, I ask for a show of hands in my class. Those who sleep in complete darkness don't even form an overwhelming majority, so my husband can't hide behind a numerical superiority. How could he have persuaded me that sleeping with the shutters closed simply went without saying?